get to the NFC and AFC title game news and notes. Did you see President Trump fed the Clemson Tigers national championship team?
I actually
thoroughly enjoyed everything about what happened with Clemson at the White House last night to celebrate their national championship win, because the government shut down. There was no one there to prepare a meal. And President Trump said he initially thought that he would have the First Lady maybe make some salads, but then didn't think the Tigers would want that. And he probably didn't either. So he ordered a bunch of fast food.
Well, you know, there's very little more American than fast food, for God's sake. So I hope they all ate well. I think that it's, not sure it had the intended PR spin, but, you know.
I think he landed on his feet, honestly, after hearing hearing all sides. I think it worked, put it that way. He said, President Trump said, quote, "We're going to serve McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King with some pizza. I really mean it. I think it's their favorite food," unquote. And then initially people thought he was kidding, but he wasn't. Sure enough, he served all that stuff on silver platters.
Right about that. So I will stop at that point and say I'm glad it all worked out. It's not what I would have wanted, but that's okay. Being at the White House and doing that is an honor in itself enough, I guess. So who cares about the food?
And much in President Trump fashion, he bragged that he bought it all himself.
Of course.
It's unclear how much he paid, but according to USA Today, in looking at the photos, they determined that all that food would have cost about $862.
Well, there you go.
He bought 48 Big Macs, 52 fillets of fish. I don't know if that was necessary. 54 quarter pounders, 48 six-piece nuggets. He actually did order 32 side salads, 52 chicken go wraps, 30 junior cheeseburger deluxes, and 30 Whoppers. And many, many fries.
That's a hell of an accounting right there.
And Domino's pizza. Reminded me of the scene where Ricky Bobby's having dinner with his wife and his wife's husband and Cal Naughton Jr. eating everything that they have under contract, including Domino's pizza and Taco Bell and all that stuff. So that happened. That happened. Only President Trump would probably be able to pull something like that off. All right, I heard something.
Like, I don't even know how to react.
No need. Just that just happened, kind of thing. Hey, Will Kane, who you can hear here on KFH, is just an unabashed Dallas Cowboys fan. And toward the end of the show yesterday, it was revealed on Twitter that I think it was Jason Garrett said on 105.3 The Fan down in Dallas that Scott Linehan's not going anywhere, the offensive coordinator. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not, but if he does stay, then the Cowboys, in many ways, will remain status quo. And Will brought up a pretty good point that in order to, especially this year, if you wanted to be in the NFL's version of the Final Four, you can't just be okay. You got the four best offenses in the NFL in the AFC and NFC title games. And I don't think anybody would confuse the Dallas Cowboys offense with being even close to being one of the best in the NFL. They have the best running attack. They have the best running back. But in today's NFL, can you afford not to move on from good, hoping to find great? I'm talking about quarterbacks, coordinators, head coaches, whatever. I know it's scary, and kudos for the Cardinals for taking a big swing at Cliff Kingsbury, which I think is a mistake, but whatever. At least they tried.
Yeah.
Can you afford to just be okay in today's NFL?
No. You've got to be, don't you think you've got to be just exceptional on, you know, I would say one side of the ball, but really isn't the isn't the flow moving to the offense now?
No doubt.
And aren't we at a place, if you don't have any better evidence than what you've got this year with the four most prolific scorers in the NFL playing in the Final Four, are any of them elite defensively? The Saints, maybe.
Saints are a lot better defensively.
Right. Maybe if you sat and took the four of them and put them in a beauty contest, they might win the Defensive Beauty Award.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots are decent defensively. The Chiefs are, where are the Chiefs defensively right now? They were fabulous last weekend. Are they capable? Are they good? Are they average?
Opportunistic?
Maybe opportunistic. I don't want to call them a bad defense, because you can't play the way that you did last week against the quarterback that you played against and have those kind of results and really be called a bad defense. Now, they may have been bad at various times during the season, but Shane, this is a what have you done for me lately league, and lately is the last game that you played.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the last two games they played, they've really been stingy. I think it's interesting that you can – in a lot of ways, protect your defense with your offense. And that makes the other guys so one-dimensional that any shortcomings on your defense, at least half of it, could get covered up. And the Chiefs have the perfect offense to do that. And I think they did that against the Colts. Now, they did hold the Colts to, I think, three or four consecutive three and outs, and that's not easy to do. But in the meantime, Chiefs offense scored three consecutive times, two touchdowns and a field goal, and boom, it's 17-0. Now, you think Marlon Mack's going to be a big part of that game going forward? No. You know. So now that puts some pressure on your offense to cover up the defense, but it can be done, and that's what the Chiefs have been doing.
Well, and that's a great point. You really bring up a good point, and Chiefs fans that are a little sassy about their defense right now probably need to listen to exactly what you just said. When you get out early on a football team, it changes the entire dimension of a game around, because it takes away, and this is part of what you want to do, it takes away pieces of the puzzle. And if all of a sudden you're down a couple of scores or you're down 17, even early in the football game, you're going to start getting a little impatient. And maybe you get away from the run. Then you become a little bit more dimensional. Now all of a sudden you can blitz a lot more. You can pressure a quarterback in different ways because they're trying to get back quickly. And trying to get back in that game. You know, every game is different. Every single game is different. And just because the Chiefs defensively showed us, and I don't know about Oakland 2 weeks before that, Shane. I mean, I don't know how much credence we've really put into that. I mean, Oakland's a capable offense, but I think they're one of the lowest scoring teams in all the National Football League. The Patriots are going to be a different kind of challenge than the Colts were. But like you said, you can't take one thing from one week and apply it to the next.
No.
What if the Patriots get up 10-0 in this game? I mean, then it changes everything. Now, it doesn't change the way the Chiefs attack, because that's the way they are offensively. They attack. But it certainly will change the way New England will attack. And it will change the dynamic of what's going on with the Chiefs defense. There's just all of these factors are fluid in the National Football League.
Yeah. Part of the Twitter question, which we'll get to in a minute, has to do with a guy I want to get your thoughts on. What's next for Nick Foles? He's got a personal buyout that'll cost him $2 million if you want to bet, quote unquote, bet on yourself. I happen to think he'll be starting somewhere next year and under a pretty healthy, maybe 2-year deal, 3-year deal. Probably won't be much longer than that. But has he done enough in postseasons, last two, because he kind of put the Eagles on his back this year, to parlay that into a good contract and be a starting quarterback somewhere next year? I happen to think yes. And I think the Eagles are in a kind of a precarious position here when it comes to dealing with both he and Carson Wentz. Wentz has proven to be a guy that's struggled to stay on the field because of health issues. And all Nick Foles does is, in relief, now I know he hasn't put it together consistently except for that one stretch under Chip Kelly running the zone read where he had like 27 touchdowns and two interceptions. But there's a reason why he's a backup. Has he done enough to turn people's heads in front offices around the NFL to say, let's go get that guy, assuming he opts out of that deal?
Yes, but for the wrong reasons. He will, because the NFL is so talent-starved at quarterback that people are willing to take a big-dollar risk to find that guy. And he certainly gives you more confidence in paying him money and giving him the reins than others would at this point. At least he's won a Super Bowl. At least he's won a playoff game. At least he's run a football team. But there's a reason that he is I don't know. Do we really call Nick Foles a career backup at this point? I mean, he's kind of different. I mean, I guess.
Do we call Case Keenum the same thing? I mean, he parlayed one good year in Minnesota to a two-year deal in Denver. So,
yeah, Case Keenum is a great example. He's making $18 million a year for one good season. And he's exactly the poster child for what I'm talking about in the National Football League, what people are thirsting for so much. Okay, good. I'm not going to believe the 6 years previous. I'm going to believe the 13 games that he just got done playing.
Mm-hmm. Combined over the last 2 years, by the way. Not just this year, you know.
Exactly. But when they signed him, they were signing him basically on a 13-game test pattern. Not the 6 years that preceded it, when no one would have given Case Keenum $18 million for a year. No one. But now you're in a situation where the Broncos had gotten themselves in a corner with Trevor Siemian and Brock Osweiler and Paxton Lynch, and hadn't taken care of working to get a franchise quarterback in. So now you reach, and then you come away empty. And now you've got him for 2 years. So you're damn right, guys like Nick Foles and Joe Flacco. Even though, what side of their careers are they on, Shane? Flacco's on the downside of his career. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that he may not still be very productive and still can't win football games for you. But is that really what you want? Is that really where you're going? I don't think so. You got to find a player that can be a part of the program for years.
Unless you're willing to go Dallas Cowboys Troy Aikman arc, where you just throw him to the wolves and you go 1-15 and you say, it's all right, man, don't worry about winning games. We're just getting you ready for 3 years from now when you know what you're doing.
Well, I mean, that might be where, you know, that's kind of where, and they've had a successful season and they're winning games, but that's kind of where the Colts or where the Ravens are with Lamar Jackson right now. Now, they're not exactly throwing them to the wolves because they've got a supporting cast, and they're not going to go 1-15, and they didn't go 1-15.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Do we really know that Lamar Jackson is the answer for them moving forward? They hope so. They're getting rid of Joe Flacco.
Yep. They're taking their swing. They're shooting their shot.
I mean, it is a very tenuous proposition with quarterbacks in the NFL. And I will say this. There is no position that I can think of in all of professional sports as important as quarterback. Not a shortstop in baseball, not a catcher in baseball, not a point guard in basketball. At the professional level, more is asked upon and expected from and had to be delivered on than quarterback. Got to have them. And there aren't that many of them growing in trees. We'll continue this thought. Get to your Cindy O Twitter question of the day as we continue in a minute.